Thinking about what Beth Allison Barr said about patriarchy and sexism in the Southern Baptist Church, or SBC, I realize there's another issue inside that church that we need to talk about. Race. So a little history first. The Southern Baptist Convention was formed in 1845 in Georgia for Christian evangelists who owned slaves and who wanted a church that supported slavery. After the Civil War and well into the 20th century, the SBC endorsed racial segregation and opposed interracial marriage. Since then, the church has formally repented of racism, and it's apologized to African Americans. But it is still predominantly a white church, with an 85% white membership. It's also the largest prominent denomination in the U.S. So that's the background. Charles Monroe Kane, who produced this hour, wanted to talk with someone for whom the Southern Baptist stance on race is personal. Reverend John Onwuchekwa, the son of Nigerian immigrants and co-founder of Atlanta's Cornerstone Church. 5 years after opening its doors, Reverend Onwuchekwa and the entire congregation of more than 400 people officially left the Southern Baptist Convention. Charles Monroe Kane sat down with him to find out what happened.
Why don't you take me back? What led you to start the Cornerstone Church in Atlanta?
Yeah, I had been pastoring for 8 years at the time. So at 22 years old, started seminary, helped to plant a church out in Denton, Texas. At 25 years old, moved from Denton to Atlanta, Georgia with 25 other people to be the co-pastor at a church plant there. When we got to Atlanta, the church that we planted had grown substantially to a good size, but I think the segment of our church that we missed out on was the lower income demographic, right? Mm-hmm. So a couple of years prior to us starting that church, so this is 2012, there was a group of folks that were like, hey, there is this place that nobody else wants to go to, and we just have this heart to be a part of this communal rebuilding project. So this group moved in, paid full rent in Section 8 housing. They cut kids' hair that lived across the street. Mm. They made birthday cakes for people that were outside. They were a part of community cleanups. And they found themselves at a place where they had achieved such a good reputation with people that were on the inside of the community that you have folks that lived in the West End that would say things like, listen, man, we really don't mess with Christianity or Jesus or all this stuff because of the experience that they had in the past. But they say, yo, there's something about y'all, the way that y'all love us and love one another, yeah, that they're like, yo, if y'all were to start a church here, we would explore and we would come. And so that was what started the conversations of what does it look like to start a church in a place like that.
So when you started the church, you became a member of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah.
Why join the Southern Baptist? What were the reasons?
I didn't know much about the SBC at the time, except for the fact that we had a friend that was involved at the time and said, all you may know is that they used to own people, but he's like, no, things have changed. It's come a long way. There's a group that's really trying to make things right. We got involved with the group because it seemed like the people that we knew had a genuine desire to partner and to come alongside. There was a group of people that all they really wanted was diversity, and it was more than enough for them to get Black faces in the joint. But there was a smaller segment of folks that it seemed like they really wanted solidarity, right? They really wanted to like help in the work that we tried to do. So we found some good relationships and friendships. And in some ways, the group was very supportive of the work that we were trying to do.
I think it's important to hear the history of Southern Baptist. I think it's very important to this story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So the geography in the name is tough because it's misleading. Southern was not just about geography. It was an ideology. So you had a group of folks that were like, oh, no. We think it's okay to tell people about the freedom that's found in Jesus while we still have Black and brown folks in chains. So at the end of the day, we're going to form our own group where we own slaves. And so in May of 1845, the Southern Baptist Convention was formed primarily around the issue of slavery.
And then, of course, as you go forward through Jim Crow, through the 1960s, that group, and let's be clear, that group is the largest Protestant denomination in America. It's a pretty big group.
Right, yeah.
The Southern Baptists were against interracial marriage. They were against the Civil Rights Act. They were against all sorts of things.
Yeah.
You guys are fired up. You're serving the poor. You're saving souls.
Right.
You're living in the community. It must have been pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
But there must have been people you're interacting with who were like, eh.
You know, the interesting thing about being Black in America, anywhere that you go, any organization that you're involved with, there's folks like that. I bank with Wells Fargo, but they've had things that have gone up right anywhere that you go. So there is not an institution in our country, faith or otherwise, that you don't run up against that. We personally stayed for as long as we did because early on, I was convinced that the majority of the opposition came from an old guard that was fading away. I felt like the thing that kept me in it for so long was focusing on the potential of all the good work that could be done, right?
Right.
So the SBC, to this day, is a billion-dollar organization. They spend $1 billion on ministry each year. And so I remember all the years that we worked for it, just kind of fighting for a voice and for resources to be allotted to the work that we were trying to do. But 2016 became a line of demarcation where it's like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, I thought that the old guard was a minority, but wait a minute. 81%?
That 81% of evangelicals voted for Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you in 2020,
yeah,
you left.
Yes.
Not just you, the entire church left.
Yeah.
Why'd you leave?
Yeah, why do we leave? Beginning in 2013, there was like one major thing that went on each year. And whenever it went on, I would like raise my hand or stand up in a room and be like, hey, 2013, they had this big conference nationwide, and they talk about the history of the convention, and slavery's not mentioned.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So I raised my hand. We need to talk about this. And I was hit with a, oh, yeah, oh, that's a great point. We're definitely going to do it. It's too late in the game to change it, so like not yet. And on and on and on, right, there were all of these things, and it was continually like, not yet, not yet. Now is not the right time. Summer 2020 became clear for me where it was like, oh, people are saying not yet, but I think it's not ever.
Ever.
Because after George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor were all killed, there was this collective reckoning in our world where for the first time, it became not just socially acceptable, but even like economically advantageous for people to take a stand. NASCAR took the Confederate flag out. Mississippi changed their state flag. So all these things go on in the world. And the SBC at the time in 2020 became very, very clear to me that it's if the destination is racial justice and solidarity, that destination is an island. And the Southern Baptist Convention is a bus. And I don't care if a bus is headed in the right direction. You cannot drive a bus to Puerto Rico. Yeah, this is the wrong vehicle for the task that we have at hand. It was a decision that should have been made earlier, but when it was clear, it was one of the easiest decisions that we ever made and slept like a baby for the, since we've left.
We've been talking about racial justice. One thing we haven't talked about is Jesus.
Right.
Because that's the whole reason for all this, right?
Absolutely.
Evangelicals are about evangelizing, meaning witnessing and mm-hmm. asking people to accept Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. And a lot of efforts yeah. and money are put into that. On one level, Southern Baptists are very effective at saving souls.
Right. Yeah. So this is where it's so hard. Being involved with the group for 10 years, you see lots of genuine people that desperately want to help, right? There are tons of examples of people there who talk about the kindness of Jesus all the time, but it's like what I don't see is courage. And so I think I stayed around for a long time because people said, no, there's a lot of good guys on this ship or on this board or lots of good guys in charge. And I think towards the end of my time, I realized I do not care how many good men are in power. I care how many courageous men are in power.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did not find, I personally, I knew some, but I did not find many.
That's Reverend John Onwuchekwa speaking with Charles Monroe Kane. He recently stepped down as pastor of Cornerstone Church in Atlanta, though he's still an active member. His organization, the Crete Collective, plants evangelical churches in black and brown neighborhoods, and his book, We Go On, is a reflection on the book of Ecclesiastes. Before he left, Charles asked Reverend Onwuchekwa to give us a benediction, a blessing to end the hour.
Suffering doesn't make anybody stupid. Slaves did not ignorantly adopt the religion of their slave masters. But what they did was they looked through the thin veneer of the hypocrisy that they saw, and they instead saw a solidarity with Jesus, a man who was innocent and at odds with the powerful, religious, hypocritical elite who persecuted this innocent man for his faith and lynched him and put him on a tree, and they saw solidarity with him. And so I think that, yes, there is a lot to lament and there's a lot to critique in this world. Sometimes God saves his children from the fire. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Sometimes God saves them through the fire. Jesus constantly talked about his death, but one thing that you see is that he never talked about the future injustice that would be his death without mentioning the future glory that would be the resurrection. And so, as we have heard a lot about hypocrisy and death, let's be reminded that as far as the gospel is concerned, death is never God's final word. It's always a preparatory word for a future resurrection. Out of darkness comes light, and I am convinced that the glory of God will shine through all of this, that the evil that we've seen is just a beautiful backdrop for the diamonds of the goodness of God to shine.